Tuesday. That means we'll check in on Wall Street with John Najarian from CNBC. But before we do, Kim Gordon is in the newsroom, and we've been listening this week to Kim's series on small businesses. And, you know, we tend to talk. And the first series, the first part is running today, and it'll run tomorrow and then again on Wednesday. But I'm interested, Kim, in what you've learned about what a small business is, because I've always been sort of curious about that term, because I think at one point the Chicago Tribune Company sort of qualified technically as a small business, but it's not what you and I think of as small businesses.
No, and actually, you know, over 50%, I think it's in my series, over 50% of small businesses in Chicago have five employees or less.
Right.
And I asked the small business commissioner to define small business for me. And it's one of those things where there's, you know, there's a million different small businesses. But, you know, they range from mom and pop to people working out of their house alone. It just, you know, it ranges. There's such a variety now of what a small business is. It could be a food truck. I mean, you know, it just there you can't specifically define it, but I thought that number was interesting that, you know, 50% have less than five employees.
I almost would like to see, I want a new classification. I want a mom and pop business. So we can say small business and then we can say mom and pop businesses, because
right.
I think a lot of times when politicians are trying to get, you know, their tax cuts or tax increases or regulation cuts or whatever through, they use the term small business, and we tend to think of mom and pop businesses, but it's really not them at all. It's a small business can be a pretty big business.
Right. I mean, look at, you know, then there are startups, which maybe start as a small business and then grow to something else.
Right.
You know?
So, all right. So the series runs today. What's the focus tomorrow?
Tomorrow are the risks and rewards of being a small business owner.
All right. Kim Gordon with that series on small businesses in Chicago and around Illinois. We'll look forward to that. Thanks, Kim.
Thank you.
You're listening to The Biz Lunch. John Najarian is on a phone line. You watch John on CNBC and also follow him on Twitter at John Najarian. Mr. Najarian, welcome back to The Biz Lunch.
Great to be with you. Thank you very much, Stephen. I'm over in Milan, right?
Quit it. Well, you were in London last week, right?
Yep. In between, I hit Geneva, Monaco, and Cannes. But yeah, it's a whirlwind tour.
Oh, listen, I was in Lake Bluff last week, and that was very nice too.
I hear that's lovely this time of year.
So tell me about Wall Street. And yesterday was kind of a weird day, right? I mean, we were hoping for this or expecting maybe a big post-tax vote spike. The S&P sort of dropped pretty quickly at the end of the day. And I don't know if there's a correlation into what's going on today, but put the last 2 days together and tell me what you saw.
Sure. Well, as you and I always talk about, Wall Street isn't just reactive to what's going on today. It's reactive to what it anticipates tomorrow and the next day. And the run, you know, over the past month and a half, 2 months, let alone the whole year, has been pretty good. And as we've come closer and closer to a tax bill to get through, I think, I'm not saying it's all priced in at all,
right,
but a lot of the initial reaction, I think, is priced in. Now, when the rubber meets the road and they put the two policies together, the House and the Senate, then I think we'll see a secondary rally.
It's a done deal, right? Don't you think? I mean, one way or another, they're now going to get a bill through.
Yes, they will. But, you know, obviously, certain oxes are going to be gored, as they always
yeah.
are.
I think mine are.
And mine, too, by the way.
Yeah.
You know, the only thing in it for most of us is hopefully there's the potential for more job creation, because corporations are the biggest beneficiaries here. But they're also the employers. We hope that corporations do well and are encouraged to keep money here rather than hold it abroad. I think a lot of what they're passing, that is one of the many goals, is to make that happen.
All right. So I'm reading on CNBC today. I don't know if it's a survey or a report from Goldman Sachs, and they talk about, the Goldilocks market that continues. And they say it's not over yet, but time might be running out, that maybe toward the end of next year, this sort of Goldilocks situation could be ending. Can you explain to me what exactly a Goldilocks situation is and what we should be doing about it?
Sure. Well, and the end of next year, like you say, Stephen, 2018 is what Goldman's talking about. I think J.P. Morgan said they see something like 25% upside based on what their read is of the tax bill and the impact to the economy and to stocks. I think the Goldilocks is that the interest rates don't get too hot, don't get too cold. In other words, they don't see us slipping into a recession and a need to cut rates, and they don't see a need to move quickly on rates either. So, in other words, keeping them right around where they are and slowly, maybe a quarter point every 2 or 3 months, normalizing the rates, that's more or less Goldilocks, the way Goldman explains it, and that tries to keep people, especially the big institutional players, interested in the stock market.
All right, let's look at some of the stocks today. It looks like the good news for, is it Revance or Revance, is bad news for Allergan?
Yeah, well, you know, there's a series of, Allergan has had so many bits of bad news over the past several years now, even though they've got some of the most popular products making people more attractive, or at least holding on to their looks longer.
We're talking about wrinkles today. Yeah,
exactly. And you know, there's a whole host of places that offer things like that. A lot of institutional players have been betting on Allergan, including several of the big activist investors and hedge funds. And quite frankly, they've been buying too high. And it looks like some of them are adjusting their positions because of the rulings, or at least the outlook that you're talking about.
All right. So, also, I wanted to ask you about Lands End. I don't know how. Yeah, I don't want to put you in a bad spot because I know you're traveling.
Right.
I don't know how much you're up to speed on all of this. Lands End out with earnings today. Had a loss in the same period last year. They had a net income $162,000 this year, but their shares so far this year are down 22%. Have we stopped wearing flannel, or what's going on there?
That is one of the issues.
I mean, you'd think they're a mail order sort of delivery place. You'd think they'd be doing okay with the online purchasing and all of that.
Yeah, you'd think so, but unfortunately, it really is a what have you done for me lately market. I mean,
right.
Bed Bath & Beyond, just a quick example. Yesterday, the stock made a beautiful pop, but it's had some brutal quarters here. And all of a sudden, you get stretched too far to one side. They make enough sales and lure enough customers in that they beat expectations, and the stock makes that pop like it did yesterday. There was a lot of unusual activity ahead of that. As far as Lands End, it's not one that we focus on nearly as much because, you know, quite frankly, the good news for them is it's not really a bricks and mortar play.
Right.
It's, like you say, an online play, and that apparently is that there's too much competition, probably from the likes of Duluth Trading and Gap Stores, which owns Old Navy, and a lot of that flannel gets traded through there.
All right, so there's that. I'm going to cut you loose here, but what are you looking at today? What's your suggestion? What are you watching?
We're continuing to flock into stocks like eBay and J.P. Morgan, quite frankly. So yesterday there was that big news about Bank America and I believe a $5 billion buyback. The same sorts of things are going to keep driving stocks like Bank America, and we think that eBay is well positioned and is getting a lot of institutional interest right now, so we were buying that stock over the last 2 days.
All right, listen, friend, I really do appreciate you joining us as you travel around Europe, because
sure.
I know it makes it even harder, so I appreciate you squeezing us in.
Oh, please. Thank you, Stephen. Have a great time back in Chicago, folks. I'll see you in 2 days.
We'll do winter's arrive for you, John. In a way, today we're doing Chicago Heritage Businesses, I guess. Steve Baird, who is the president and CEO of Baird Warner, will be around in the second half hour to talk about real estate. Their company goes back to before the Chicago fire. Rick Mancuso is on a phone line now. He is the president of and president and general manager of Lake Forest Sports Cars. The Mancusos go back to 1923 selling cars in Chicago. Well, I think maybe first in Batavia. Rick, welcome to the Wintrust Business Lunch.
Stephen, it feels real good to be back on WGN because Bob Collins and I were good buddies.
Ah, well, that's good to hear. I'm glad you're with us.
And probably a month didn't go by when I wouldn't be driving to work or get a call at home sometime in the morning and someone would say, call Bob Collins right away. He needs to reach you. He's been trying to call you. Get a hold of him right away. It was great fun.
Well, how many? Okay, so let's take a Ferrari that you guys are selling up there in Lake Forest today. How many of cars could we have bought at your great or your grandfather's spot in 1923 in Batavia with the price of a Ferrari today?
Probably a couple of years worth of his cars, I would think.
Of the whole inventory.
Yes.
That's a pretty amazing.
It's really amazing. You know, and my DNA is Chevrolet. My father was a Chevrolet dealer here in Chicago from 1953 to 94, and I had the opportunity to work with him for 7 years during the 70s. And so my DNA is Chevrolet, Corvette, and sports cars and things like that. And so this is different, and that DNA is not lost on me to this day.
Well,
so
you got a nice big 70,000 square foot showroom up there, and I'm interested in. So tell me about the difference in selling, Rick, because if you're talking about a Chevrolet, that's one thing. But if you're talking about, you know, a high-end sports car, it's the same product, I guess. But in many ways, it's not, right? It's a completely different sale.
There's a lot of similarities and there's a lot of differences. When I was with Chevrolet, we were selling cars to people that needed the cars.
Right.
When I sold Corvettes there, I was selling cars to people that wanted the Corvette. And that was a different atmosphere. It was a different dialogue. Everything was different. They were having fun. They were enjoying it. And that got me pointed in the direction of doing something with other sports cars. And now being with Ferrari, no one is coming here to buy a Ferrari because they need to have one for transportation. They really want the car. It's a fun experience. They may have been waiting all their life for it. And they're going to enjoy it, and we're going to enjoy it with them.
Well, you know, I was wondering then, because in my mind, I would think that your business would suffer during the Great Recession. But if you get to that point where you've got that money to spend, maybe there wasn't a big drop. Did you guys suffer during the recession?
We always suffer during a recession. And unfortunately, I've been through three of them since we've been around for a little while with Ferrari. But what happens is our volume is not necessarily affected. Our margin is.
Okay.
The negotiations are harder, and that makes it different. So, yes, we do certainly do suffer during a recession. Not as bad as, say, a commodity or a high-volume dealer would, though.
Well, you know, and I was saying before you came on the air that I'm always a little dubious of those TV commercials with cars with big bows on them. Do people give cars for Christmas? I mean, do you see an uptick at Christmas time?
We see generally a good close to the fourth quarter. We see some increased activity between Christmas and New Year's. 50% of our owners are CEOs from around the Midwest. Actually, it's a little bit more than that.
Oh,
it's probably 70% right now. So, yeah, there's some guys that come in that want to buy themselves a present after they're done buying presents for everybody else. But it's a little bit more of a planned purchase than that. No one walks in on the spur of the moment and said, gee, I was driving by and thought I'd buy a Ferrari. It just doesn't work that way.
Tell me a little bit about the price range of what you guys offer.
We have new cars that start right around 200. We have, and they go to probably right now, maybe 425. Our limited edition cars are higher. We have used cars that go from 70 or 80,000. And if we go up into the classics, it goes into the millions.
Wow.
So it covers quite a range.
That's quite a range. So this isn't a very fair question, but what's a typical volume for you in a year? How many cars do you move?
This year, for example, our target will be somewhere around 125 new and pre-owned cars. And next year, we're looking to move that closer to 175 by increasing a little bit of our new cars, because now that we're a Ferrari-only dealership, we can focus more on Ferrari and do a better job with it and have the opportunity to earn some more allocation, which is what it's all about, being a Ferrari dealer. And then we get more trade-in, so it helps our used car business. So it becomes a little bit of a self-driving volume increase.
Rick Mancuso, President General Manager, Lake Forest Sports Cars. Hey, it's great to talk to you. I appreciate you taking time out today.
Well, I appreciate it. It's always good to be on GN.
Yeah,
Brings back a lot of great memories.
Look forward to the next time, Rick. Thanks very much.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Suzanne Mushin is in the studio, and we just have too much to talk about.
Always. And also, what happened to my theme song? Remember for a while I had a theme song?
We've tried to block that out.
Really?
We're disappearing that. Like so many men are being disappeared around the country.
That is how it feels, actually.
Suzanne is the co-host of The Big Payoff that you can listen to on WGNRadio.com. Women in the workplace, sort of.
Yeah.
I've said that. Obviously, these men who are being disappeared have committed offenses, not always crimes,
right,
but offenses. But it reminds me of a Soviet purge in some way where they are disappeared. I mean, it wasn't enough to fire Matt
Lauer.
They destroyed his office.
Right.
And
then we're left as the audience looking at these images of there was a man and he's gone.
Right.
And now we have the two women left.
I mean, it's immature in a way, I think, that we have to pretend they didn't exist. You know, that, I think. I don't know.
Well, so look, House of Cards is going to continue on Netflix. They just announced that. That was a question as to whether they would continue it.
And Kevin Spacey obviously will not be
Will not be in it. So here again, you have a place that viewers are used to going that had Kevin Spacey front and center that now he's just gone.
And they're going to be going there to see what they do without him, less than maybe perhaps what the show is.
Right. And I even had to question myself, because I do love that show, will I watch without him? Which isn't really that I'm such a fan and still adore him after all that we now know, but I'm just saying, is the show really still a show without him?
So
I don't know.
There's that. And then Netflix also announced that they've parted ways with Danny Masterson,
right,
who is a guy who was on The 70s Show, and he's on this, we watched the show The Ranch. It's Ashton Kutcher, Danny Masterson.
Yeah, you've talked about that with me, yeah.
And his is an interesting case because there are multiple women who are accusing him not of harassment but of rape. Very serious. Netflix came down on Spacey. They had not on Masterson until yesterday. They
well,
ended his
unlike
filming.
Spacey, he has denied these charges.
He issued a very strong statement saying that the allegations are not true and that the police have been investigating, that he has not been charged with a crime, let alone convicted of a crime.
Right. And Spacey came right out, as did a number of other men, came right out, apologized. I don't know. It's a tough thing,
I mean,
right?
It's not like it's one person accusing him, and it's four women accusing him. I think it's four. And yet he's being disappeared.
No, and yet the RNC supported Roy Moore this morning.
That's
so there
amazing.
We are, Steve.
So,
this is where we are.
Right. The RNC says that it will now not only... 2 weeks ago, they were talking about unseating Roy Moore
correct.
If he were elected.
Nope, endorsed.
Now they're going to give him money to run. So, okay. And people are saying, oh, that's the death of the Republican Party, blah, blah, blah.
It won't be the death of the Republican Party.
I don't think anything really sticks anymore.
This is what we thought after, you know, how many times have we all said this? Well, that will be the last straw. Nope, they're actually fully endorsing him with cash.
And so do you think that will hurt the Republicans with women who are Republicans?
Not in Alabama, necessarily.
No, but I mean, talk about 2018.
I think, look, if all of this is doing one thing that is positive, it's causing a conversation. The fact that you and I cover this topic as much as we do is because it is out there and people are talking about it. That is my only hope, is that it raises a conversation that wasn't occurring before. Will it fundamentally change women's votes if they're Republican? I don't know.
And that's the question. So you could say that 60% of women are against the Republicans, but if those 40% were the 40% who are Republicans and feel...
Yeah,
that they're going to stay home, then nothing's changed
right.
when it comes to voting.
Look, 2018 is going to be a lot about turnout. And if the women can be mobilized, we'll have to see what happens.
Okay, so there was a study out this week or a survey which showed a difference in how women view all of this. More than gender difference, right? It was more women among age.
Yeah. The interesting question they were asked is, how often do you think this is occurring in your workplace? And it didn't really have that many differences if you look at like men versus women. They pretty much thought within a couple of points, yeah, it's occurring at 68% or 65%. The big difference was in age, where there was a 13-point difference between the perception of women 18 to 49 about how often it was occurring,
right.
with them thinking it was occurring more often than women 50 and older. And there are some interesting reasons
for
that. So
the women who are older think it happened less.
Less, right.
Which is interesting because they probably were in a workforce where it happened more.
Right. If they came out of the generation just before us.
We've all seen Mad Men.
Exactly. Right. We have all. Have you seen Mad Men,
No,
Steve?
I never really
I know. You probably haven't. Yeah. I knew that. I had to call you on it. But it's true. So one thing the survey posits is that it could be that women under 49, women in their 40s and 30s, talk more openly and more comfortably about this issue. So maybe the perception is, oh, this is happening a lot because we're talking about it more. The other thing could be what you said, which is the women 50 and older just sort of take it as a given
that
is the way the workplace is.
Interesting. The tax bill. Oh, you know, right now, well, he's probably done now, but Mike Frerich, the state treasurer, I talked to him earlier today. We had a brief phone conversation and he had a news conference about the Republican tax plan. And that one of the provisions in the tax plan is requiring the Social Security Administration to, if requested, provide a Social Security number to a fetus.
Yes.
To an unborn child so that unborn child can have a 529 college savings plan in his or her name.
Which on the surface is being couched as college planning, and isn't this great from a fiscal point of view, but is clearly making a social statement.
It is the most insulting thing, I think. In Frerich's point, and I didn't know this until he told me, you can already do it. You know, a mom or dad or grandpa,
if they wanted to, they if that were their views,
up,
right?
They can, well, no, not a, no. They could set up the 529 plan
oh.
in the name or in their own name,
yes,
in preparation for their unborn children. And then when the child is born, you transfer the beneficiary to that kid.
Right.
So this is not fixing a problem that exists.
No.
It's kind of insulting, because if you want to do something, if you want to make increased protections for fetus, great, go for that. Stand up for it. But don't tell me you're helping kids
exactly.
save for college.
That's right. Let's at least, again, let's have those conversations in the way this country was designed to have public square conversations, rather than slipping them into tax bills and forcing us to have a backdoor conversation.
A tax cut bill that provides Social Security numbers for a fetus is weird as hell.
And the fact that we have to then be told about it is because it's not apparent.
You said that women will be lining up at the ballot or at the voting booth in November.
Yeah.
They're lining up at the petition filing booths this November. Boy, that was awkwardly put.
No,
but the point is that there are so many more women who are going to be running.
Coming to run. This is what I love about this point, these data points, is that here in Illinois, there are actually a number of movements that have been gaining traction that I think you're seeing some of the results of that in the women registering to run. So there's was a movement here that Kristen Gillibrand and Bridget Gaynor were part of called Off the Sidelines. There's been She Should Run. There's been Genevieve Thiers has been very active in this. Anna Valencia, Lucy Moog, lots of women encouraging other women. Hey, you know, if we're upset about all of this, a great thing to consider. Run for office.
New York Times had a story that said 354 female House candidates in the upcoming election next year. 291 are Democrats, 63 Republicans, 38 female Senate candidates, 25 Democrats, 13 Republicans. There are four times as many women challenging House incumbents this time as compared to the last time.
That's the statistic to pay attention to. And look, I give anyone who's running for office in today's day and age a lot of credit, because there is no glory in any of this. But I'm a big believer in, if we're going to feel under threat, run for office.
Suzanne Buchan, check out the podcast, The Big Payoff, at WGNRadio.com and just about anywhere else, right?
Everywhere else.
We'll see you next week.
See you next week.
You know, I said we've been sort of heritage today. We were talking to Rick Mancuso earlier. They've been selling cars in the area since 1923. What about a real estate company that's been selling homes in the area since before the Chicago fire? Steve Baird is on a phone line now. He is the president and CEO of Baird and Warner, the real estate giant in the Chicago area. Steve, welcome to the Wintrust Business Lunch.
Thank you very much. Glad to be here.
Hey, I got a couple questions for you. I want to start with congratulations on your, what is the Tribune, right? Named you one of the top workplaces for large businesses in Chicago. It's not new to you. You've done it before. So how do you take, and I would imagine with Baird Warner, it's kind of a disparate workforce. How do you create a culture with people working in such far-flung areas?
Well, you have to set the right tone and set the right culture with people. As I run the company longer and longer, culture is just more and more important to what we do, particularly since we operate in 35 different locations around the Chicago metropolitan area. So you have to set that tone from the top.
Is it true you sit at a desk that was from before the Chicago fire?
I don't actually, but there is one here that belonged to my great-grandfather. We've moved it in. I used to sit at it, and we've moved it into, we now have a history room where we display a lot of our history.
You know, speaking of history, Baird and Warner implies a merger at one point or another, an acquisition, but it seems like with real estate companies, there have been a lot of conglomerating. How's that for making up a word? How do you maintain independence when people seem to be consolidating so much?
Well, we actually like that trend a lot, because a lot of what used to be companies run by local people who were really good business people are now run by large organizations, generally somewhere else in the country. We've benefited a lot because we're in a local business and we have local management and make local decisions here. And one of the advantages we have is that we don't have to sell. In a lot of cases, for whatever reasons, both good and bad, some of these companies have had to sell or wanted to capitalize or take money out of the business, and we haven't needed to do that.
What are you expecting for next year when it comes to home sales? I mean, I know Chicago specifically has been sort of slow to recover when you look at the Case-Shiller indices. What do you think 2018 will bring for us when it comes to home sales?
Well, this year the activity level has actually been very high. What has been slow to recover here is the average sales price. It's been modest. It hasn't been as strong as it has been on the coast, but it's still been good. And I look for 2018 to be similar to 2017. All the indicators are good. You know, employment's good. Interest rates are still low. Inventory's pretty good. So we look for 18 to be a lot like 17 and to have a lot of activity. The market's actually very active.
18 will be different in that there could well be a very different tax structure for home buyers and home owners when it comes to writing off their real estate taxes and their mortgage interest as well. What impact do you think a Republican tax bill will have on your business, on home selling?
Well, we don't know the final way it's going to come out, and it's written in two different ways in each bill, in the House and the Senate version. But they're talking about limiting the deductibility of interest from $1 million down to $500,000. That really affects a small portion of the marketplace. In our particular case, about 12% of our transactions are in that level, and they're not taking it away completely. So you can deduct up to $500,000, and then you can't deduct it above that point. So it will have some impact, but I don't think it's going to be that great.
Steve Baird, President, CEO of Baird & Warner. Hey, it was great to talk to you today. I hope we can do it again.
Wonderful. Thank you. Appreciate the opportunity.